Hey, this is David Mazouz, Bruce Wayne from Gotham, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, all you entertainment enthusiasts. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Welcome back to the Lair. For all you new listeners out there, glad to have you on board. Welcome to the Lair for the first time. Always glad to have new listeners on board. Another terrific show coming your way. Today, we are going to spend some time in Gotham City with Bruce Wayne, actor David Mazouz. He's going to be along momentarily. David, of course, plays young Bruce Wayne on the Fox hit TV series Gotham. If you were with me back on episode 149 of Comic Book Central, then you heard my brief chat with David at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. That was fun. Got to meet up with him there, talk a little bit Batman, talk a little bit some of his inspirations. Today, you're going to hear my in-depth conversation with this talented young man. That is coming your way in just a few minutes. Now, if you are new to Comic Book Central, or if you've been around for a while, maybe missed a few episodes, there are quite a few episodes out there to be listened to. You can catch up at the online lair. It's comicbookcentral.net. That is where you're going to find each and every episode of the show. They're all right there in the Comic Book Central archive. You just click episodes at the top of the homepage. They're all there waiting for you there, including my Terrificon Q&A with David's Gotham castmate, Cameron B. Kondova. She plays Selina Kyle on Gotham. That was episode 142 of Comic Book Central. So if you're a Gotham fan, you want to check that out. Episode 142 right there. At comicbookcentral.net, you're also going to find a link to the show on iTunes. So if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the show. That's how you get each and every episode. Whenever they post, you get them there. Also, if you're in iTunes, if you'd leave a review in iTunes, really appreciate it. That is one way to support the show. On the website, you're also going to find links to the Facebook page and Twitter pages. They're there. Share the Lair. That is another way you can support the show. All these are free too. You want to support the show? Listening is one way. Sharing with others, subscribing to the show, all free. Share those episodes when I post them on Facebook. Retweet them on Twitter. New episodes weekly on Saturdays. So listen, share them with everyone you know. Really appreciate it when you do that. Blueberry, Stitcher. If you're not on iTunes, we're on those services as well. You can find Comic Book Central there. All right, big show today. And of course, the spoiler alert is on high. We are going to be talking about Gotham. So if you have never seen the show, or if you haven't caught up with it through episode 9 of this current season, episode 9 was called The Executioner, we're going to be talking about Gotham. So a lot of plot points out there. You have been warned. Hey, here's a little bit of information on my special guest today. Check it out. Then I'm going to sit down for a bat chat with David Mazouz. If you're a fan of the TV shows Mike and Molly, Private Practice, The Office, or Criminal Minds, and you've probably caught some early guest appearances on those shows by David. But in 2012, he landed a co-starring role alongside 24's Kiefer Sutherland on the Fox TV series Touch, where he portrayed Jake, the 11-year-old son of Sutherland's character Martin. That show ran for 2 seasons, and then the following year, David once again landed a co-starring role on a Fox series, this time one with 75 years worth of history behind it, Gotham. Now, the series tells the tale of James Gordon, a rookie detective with the Gotham City Police Department, assigned to find out who murdered the parents of young Bruce Wayne, played by David. Now, in the Batman feature films, we've seen glimpses of young Bruce's life in flashback scenes, but with Gotham, for the first time in Batman's live-action history, we get to see the full story of how Bruce becomes the Dark Knight detective. We see his relationship with Jim Gordon, his life at Wayne Manor with Alfred Pennyworth, first meetings with Selina Kyle, Penguin, Poison Ivy, and so many other characters and storylines from our favorite four-color adventures. In recent episodes, David even gets to perform opposite himself, as both Bruce Wayne and Subject 514A, or 5 for short, Bruce's mysterious doppelganger.
Took you long enough.
Where's Selina? She's not on her squad if you did anything.
She's fine.
Where is she?
She left a little while ago. I don't know where she went.
I take you in, and this isn't thanks I get. You run around with Selena pretending to be me.
Is that why you're angry? Because I was pretending to be you, or that I spent the day with Selena? For someone who has everything, you have no idea what you actually want. Or maybe you're just too scared to take it.
At least I know who I am.
Cody Boots, Mel Spruce, let's all just take a breath, shall we?
Don't worry. You won't be seeing me anymore. Neither will she. I don't know why I was created, but I know I don't belong in Gotham. Say goodbye to Selena for me. And thank her for the kiss.
Well, my guest today has taken on one of the most iconic roles in comic book history, that of Bruce Wayne on the Fox TV series Gotham. It is time to chat with David Mazouz. David, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
Happy to have you here. A pleasure meeting up with you in Cincinnati. That was fun. I hope you had a fun time in Ohio while you're here.
I did. I know. It's crazy because I do a lot of these conventions all over the country mostly. And it's so, like, I'm always so excited. Oh, like, oh yeah, I'm going to Cincinnati. Like, I'd never been to the Midwest. Before I went to Cincinnati, I'd only been to the Midwest once, and I went to Chicago for another convention. But I wanted to see Cincinnati, and then you end up being there for, like, literally 2 days, and those 2 days are filled with convention stuff. So I didn't get to see as much as I would have liked, but it was really, really great, and people are just so nice up there.
Do you get to, like, kind of, like, write down, okay, I want to come back here, or I want to do this, or, like, you know, down the road, do you kind of hit some different spots and different areas where you go, yeah, I think I want to come back there when I can relax and just be myself?
Absolutely. I mean, I take mental notes like that all the time. Like, if I come to a place that seems cool, but I just, like, don't have enough time to check it out. I mean, that's really every place. I'm actually kind of obsessed with geography, and so whenever I go to a new place, I always want to explore it. But usually, recently, when I go to new places, it's because of a convention. I just see the hotel, I see the convention center, and that's just about it.
You're on the road right now as we're talking, right? You're at a convention.
I am. I'm in Puerto Rico. I'm in San Juan right now.
Man, okay. What's the reaction you get from fans? Because obviously you're doing a lot more of these things. Look, you're Bruce Wayne. You're going to be Batman, okay? So you're doing a ton of these things. What's the reaction you're getting from fans about you, the show, bringing these characters to life? How's it been going?
It's been overwhelmingly positive, which is it's amazing. It's anything I could ask for. It's funny because, you know, you said at the beginning of the interview, I'm stepping into one of the most iconic comic book characters there is, which is totally true. But, you know, when I first booked it, what was it, like almost 4 years ago now, when I first booked it, I didn't, no, almost 3 years ago, sorry. Time's a little messed up. just about 3 years ago.
You're a veteran now.
Yeah, I'm a veteran now. So when I first booked it, I didn't think about the fact that I was stepping into an iconic role. I just thought, oh yeah, it's a cool role playing Bruce Wayne. I'd always been a Batman fan, so it was really exciting. But I wasn't thinking about, like, criticism from other people or kind of having that intensified pressure when you step into a role that's beloved by so many people, as opposed to stepping into a role that's new to whatever that project is, which is everything I had done before Gotham. And I really didn't think about that until Comic-Con the first year, when the show hadn't aired yet at all. We were shooting like episode 2 or 3. We'd just started. It was still all very, very, very new. And all that the public had seen is a 2-minute trailer that had been released a couple months before that. And these fans were like lining up, like hundreds of them, to get our autographs. And they were so excited to meet us. They wanted to get pictures with us. And I was like, you haven't even seen the show yet. You don't know if you'd like it, you know, like. And so that's when I realized these people aren't here because they're fans of Gotham, because it's impossible to be a fan of Gotham when you haven't even seen it yet. Yeah. They're here because they're fans of the Batman mythology that's been around for, at that point, in about 75 years. And that's when I realized I'm stepping into something much larger than a Fox show. I'm stepping into an entire world, an entire society of people.
Yeah, huge world you were stepping into. Yeah, and we comic book fans are very passionate and we were very vocal, as I'm sure you could tell. Do you get to be a kid at all? I mean, you're doing all this work at such a young age. What do you do to just be a kid? I mean, do you get to do that much? Because you got school, you got work, you got all these things going on.
Yeah, it's tough to fit in being a normal kid, but I try. I'm actually from LA. That's home for me. And the show shoots in New York, and so I go back and forth all the time. I go to school in LA, and that's where my school is located. And so for the most part, I do it long distance when I'm in New York.
So there's an actual school. Like, do you when you're there, do you go into an actual school, a classroom? Yeah. You sit down and there's a teacher and.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Walk me through that, because that's got to be strange. Like for them, for you, or is it just like totally normal? Is everyone just like, there's David?
I think it's more of option B.
Okay.
People are just kind of like, I think at first it was weird. You know, a lot of the people. I'd say a good, not the majority of them, but a good portion of them, the people that I go, the friends, people in my grade that I go to school with now, I had known before high school. They went to my middle school, and they kind of, the same thing was happening then also. And the people that I didn't know before I went to this school, they and the teachers also and the administration, you know, it took a second to figure it out. But, you know, once they did, it kind of becomes a norm, a very weird norm, but a norm nevertheless.
Yeah, I guess in LA, they're probably used to that kind of thing, but I guess the scheduling would just be so off because sometimes you're there, sometimes you're not there, sometimes you're, you know, on a laptop, you know, learning civics or something.
Exactly. Yeah. It's funny, but, it works. It's, it works. It's challenging, but it works.
Do you have a favorite subject? I mean, is there like, you know,
I do.
Okay.
It used to be math.
Wow.
Now it's history. It changed in high school for some reason. I don't know why. All throughout middle school it was math, but now it's history. I love history, geography. I still love math. Yeah, so that's my favorite subject. I mean,
is it about history that, I mean, are there certain events that you're attracted to that you just want to learn more about? Are there certain individuals throughout history that fascinated you?
I think the thing that fascinates me the most about history is that it explains how the world that we know, the world that we live in, came to be. I love learning what happened before I was on this earth.
I don't know about you, but are you good with dates?
I am, yeah.
Okay, because I would always, that was always my least, I would always cram right before a test, memorize as many dates as I could, and then forget everything.
I mean, I think I forget them. I still do cram, but
okay.
I do find it interesting.
Things haven't changed that much since I've been out of school, though, right?
No.
Okay. No. glad to know there's people still cramming right before tests. Let's go back a little bit further. Your early interest in acting. So it wasn't necessarily, I'm going to be an actor. It was sort of, you fell into it via your sister, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. It's not the typical way people get into acting. I think the majority of people choose themselves that they, you know, they, this is what they want to do. They fall in love with it and they say, you know, I'm going to pursue this. With me, when I was young, my sister, when I was like 5 or 6, my sister's 3 years older than me. So when she was 8 or 9, she really wanted to take classes. She really liked it. I was her younger sibling, so I just kind of did whatever she did. My mom gave my mom a chance to go to Costco every Sunday and she'd take us to classes. And so we just took classes for like 2-3 years. That's all we did.
Chose it. Like this was what she wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I can give you the long story. So basically what happened was we were walking in the mall when I was about 5 or 6, my sister was about 8 or 9, with some good, family friends of ours. We call them our cousins cause I don't really have any real, aunts or uncles that are in the States. But anyway, so we were walking with them and this lady approached them, and they're 2 years apart. They don't look anything alike. And she asked if they were the two boys, if they were twins. and she basically was selling acting classes. And she, you know, she mentioned that her company trained Zach and Cody, and I was 5 at the time, so I was like, "Oh, Zach and Cody, what?" You know,
that registered. So, that registered for young David.
Yeah, that hit the bell. And so they were like, "No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to take classes." But my sister was like, "Ooh, Mom, I really want to do that." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I want to do it too. Sure, yeah."
Anything mom, that would get your sister's attention.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I understood. Understood. I'm a younger sibling too. Yes.
And so my mom thought in her head, okay, they'll go to this acting thing and they'll see that there's a long line and that they have to, you know, there's going to be a ton of people and it's not going to be fun and they're going to want to leave halfway through it. That didn't happen. shocker.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, my sister and I really, really liked it. But that class wasn't a good class. And so my mom is a therapist. And so she asked around and she got the name of some good acting classes. We went to one and it was just so much fun. And so we went there every Sunday for 2 years, about a year through. We started going to different ones, and I ended up at a commercial workshop. I'm about 7 now. Ended up at a commercial workshop, and at the very end, they had a showcase, and I made. You had to write your own commercial and then perform it in front. And they invited a bunch of commercial agents to come and watch. And so my sister did one about Play-Doh. I did one about Oreos. I made a little song about Oreos.
Do you remember it?
My mom helped me with it. I do, yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
If you had asked me this 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have, but somebody asked us about it, and
Oh, good.
It goes, O-R-E-O, chocolate is the way to go. Yummy feeling in your mouth, and those cookies going south, or something like that.
There you go.
I don't know. It was something like that.
That's it.
My mom's in the room right now correcting me, saying that's not how it went.
Okay, close enough. It got you Gotham eventually. But, you know, it worked out. It worked out well enough. Okay, so what are they teaching you in, you know, when you're that age? Because I'm always kind of curious about this, because when you see child actors, it can go one of two ways. There can kind of be that sugary sweet, and you can kind of tell they're acting. And then you see other child actors that you're like, how in the world can they emote that much at that age? What are they teaching you? Because you've had some heavy-hitting roles just in your few years of acting. What are they teaching you in those classes that you're taking away from that and you still keep today?
You know, honestly, because I was so young and I have a terrible long-term memory, everybody in my family can corroborate that. I have great short-term memory for lines and stuff, but my long-term memory is absolutely awful.
I mean, they're teaching you how to tap into emotions or how to like relate personal experiences or things like that.
They do. I mean, okay. I remember a few specific things from the acting classes, but the majority of it, I don't remember a lot of it. And I think what it really did for me was I think the practice was what really, really helped me. You know, you go there, they give you a script and you read it with somebody else and you get it right on the spot and you kind of have to use your instincts, and they kind of teach you to like at the commercial workshop, they kind of tell you how to, you know, be in a commercial and you have to be a little over the top. And I remember I took classes and, the acting, you know, there are like certain things that I remember. Like I remember the acting teacher said that in every scene, any character, any scene, whatever it is, always wants something. And it either falls into the category of love or it falls into the category of power. And that's for every single scene. And I don't use that every time I do a scene. I don't think about, you know, what is my character want. I mean, I think it's a great thing to do. But there are things like that kind of stay with you, I think, in your subconscious and guide you through when you do. So it's not like lessons that you kind of actively remember. I think it's more of the practice, and when you use it in that class, and it kind of guides you and brings you slowly to the next step and to the next step to the next step, if that makes any sense.
It does. Oh, there's a lot of good tips there too. Things to kind of take with you, give you character motivation. Did you do an early commercial with Kiefer Sutherland?
No, I didn't.
Okay, it's listed on your bio online, or at least on Wikipedia, and I wasn't sure if that was spurious information or not.
I did an internet series called Daybreak. We had a little cameo. Kiefer and I had a cameo in that.
Okay, that might be what they're referring, because they said something like you did a commercial when you were 8 with them. And I thought, boy, that would be very coincidental for, you know, or maybe that's how he got the role of Touch or something. Maybe Kiefer remembered him or something.
No.
Okay.
I booked Touch when I was 10. So I met Kiefer then.
Okay, that's why. Well, we got to go and change that Wikipedia page. Okay. You get the role of Jake Bohm on Touch. Man, such a tough role to come into at that early age. What preps did you do? Because I think you've said in interviews too that initially the character in season one, I think, was they had made him autistic.
Yeah.
They weren't sure if that's what they wanted to go with in season two. But how did, obviously in season one you had to prepare for that. How did you go into preparing for that role?
Well, I mean, I say this a lot, and I think it's very true. For any role, you go in to the audition and you read a script and you take your best guess at what they want. And if you book it, that means that your guess was right. And so a lot of what, and this is true for Gotham, true for any project that I've done, a lot of what you do when you get on set, the preparation process, I think for me at least, happens during the audition. You kind of choose who your version of the character is in the audition, and if they like it, then they'll hire you, and then you know that they like it, and that you know that that's what they want. But further preparations for Touch was they hired an autistic specialist on the pilot only, who really helped me throughout the pilot. I also worked with Francis Lawrence, who directed the pilot, and also multiple Hunger Games movies. I worked with him for a couple weeks before we shot the pilot. One of the things was that, If you notice, Jake always wears long sleeve shirts, and at the very end of the sleeve, it always has a slit in it, like a cut slit, and Jake always has his thumbs through it. That you can notice. What you don't know is that I always had marbles in there, and you can't see me right now. It's a podcast, but Jake would always kind of rub throughout every single scene. I'd always have a marble in each of my hands.
It's like a hand motion, right? So
kind rub. Of like this. Yeah, it's kind of a compulsive thing that autistic children have a tendency to do. Also, Jake, you know, he always has his arms completely straight. Never, like, when most people walk, they kind of let their arms kind of loose and sway back and forth in accordance with their legs, whereas Jake, his arms are always completely straight down by his side no matter what. And so it kind of that gave another aspect of, you know, this child is different. And what else? I mean, I watched a ton of autistic videos of children with autism. But like you said, during the pilot, they wanted Jake to be autistic, but then they kind of didn't want to be concerned with making sure that everything that had Jake too would be consistent with a child with autism, so they kind of abandoned that idea pretty early on in season one. But I mean, still, most of the inspiration for Jake's tendencies were from the tendencies of autistic children.
Some heavy hitters in this show: Kiefer Sutherland, Danny Glover, Francis Fisher. You got to work with. What were you able to take away from them? There's like acting class after acting class right there. So much history.
No, that show was probably the best experience. That was probably the one project that advanced my acting capabilities to a huge level, more than any other project. I mean, working in general day after day like that, which I'd never done before. I mean, before Touch, I'd only done guest star roles, co-star roles, which, you know, don't last more than a week. But going in episode after episode, day after day, like on a consistent schedule and just working so consistently really, really helped in advancing my training as an actor. In addition, working with people like Danny Glover, you know, it's funny enough, Danny Glover was, he got killed in the fourth scene, the fourth episode of the show. And within those four episodes, most of the scenes were with Kiefer. I only had one scene with him, which is kind of disappointing because, you know, he's such an amazing actor.
Yeah, he's damn clever.
Exactly. Yeah. I only had one scene with him the entire show. But working with Kiefer for 2 years was so like unspeakably incredible. I think a lot of people ask me, like, what's the one thing that he taught you? And I think if I had to answer that question, he taught me countless things, but and a lot of them through example. But one of the things that he really taught me was to always be prepared for work. You know, when you show up on set, when you show up anywhere, like, and this didn't just translate to my acting experience. This is translated to school. This is translated to anything I've ever done. Preparation is the most valuable key you could hold. You know, if you get to set and you're not 100% with your lines, it can really affect not just yourself, but a lot of what goes on set. Yeah, I mean, it was, and also working with Gugu Mbatha-Raw for the first season, also amazing. I mean, we had a lot of really, really incredible people working on that show, in front and behind the camera.
Preparation, that is a recurring theme in a lot of these interviews I do with actors. So many of them have often said that. One thing I'm sure you prepared for amazingly was Gotham. When and how did you first hear about Gotham?
When and how? It's a great question. I remember I was in the car. I did a movie in Argentina for 3 months between sixth and seventh grade, about the year after I finished Touch. There was 1 year in between the end of Touch and the beginning of Gotham, and it was in that year. I did three movies that year. And I was in Argentina. I did a movie with Ed Asner and Joe Fiennes, and I was living down there for 3 months. Anyway, so I just gotten back to LA, and I remember, like, just a couple days before, and I remember I was pulling into my driveway in my house, and I was sitting in the front seat. My mom was in, and she got a call from my manager at the time, and he said, "Oh yeah, there's this great project. It's called Gotham. It's about Bruce Wayne growing up as a kid." And some other, you know, Batman characters, growing up and their younger versions.
So mom's hearing this and translating it to you, or are you hearing the conversation?
No, the she's on speakerphone.
Okay, so you're hearing all this. When you first hear Gotham, Bruce Wayne, what goes in your mind?
I mean, I was excited, but you have to understand, as an actor, I'm sure any actor could tell you the same thing. You go out on tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of auditions, and you actually end up booking one in 1,000 if you're lucky. I mean, that's like the hard truth of it. And yeah. So I was excited, but you never want to get too excited about a project until you book it, because you're just going to, you know, end up getting disappointed. And, you know, the majority of things you don't book, and I knew that, so I never counted on even getting close. But I was, of course, I was excited because I had been a Batman fan my entire life. He's always been a favorite superhero. And so I went for the initial audition about, I think it was early December. And then they called me, and I think they'd already done a wide casting call. I don't even remember now the specifics of it. But they wanted me to meet with some of the producers. And so then I went in again, a couple weeks later, and it was right before Christmas break. And I had 102 fever. And nice. I was totally not in the best place to be auditioning for it, but Christmas break was coming up, and so, like, you know, they had to get it in before Christmas break. What I do remember, though, specifically, was that I tested 3 times in 1 week. I came back, and the third test, that, like, I went in, I auditioned, went in again for a test in January, and then, like, I got home that night, And then they called me back and they're like, yeah, we want to audition you again. We want to test you again against some other kid. And then like same thing happened again. And the third test, because the Mentalist was shooting, all the auditions were on the Warner Brothers lot in Burbank. And because the Mentalist, you know, and so they actually cut my hair and they like told me what to wear and to make me look more like Bruce Wayne.
Okay, now it's getting serious. Now, you know, it's gone beyond just, we want to see if this kid can read the sides or something.
No, by this point I knew like it was close, and I was like very, very nervous. I really, really wanted this job. You know, because who wouldn't want this job as a 12-year-old boy?
Yeah.
And
do you recall the scenes you were doing? I mean, do you recall who you were acting with and the scenes?
I do. It was a faux script. It was not, they were very, 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 could not emphasize this enough, secretive about the project and what it was. I really didn't know what it was about. I knew that it was going to center around a young Commissioner Gordon, and they kept saying that, you know, they hadn't cast the commissioner, the person who was playing the other lead. Like, they wouldn't even like tell me who the other lead was, and I kind of figured that it was going to be Commissioner Gordon, but they were very secretive. And the script was about a boy whose older brother had died, and he was had a scene with a therapist, and the therapist is saying that the boy's very doesn't want to be there. He's obviously there by force. And he's obviously very close to his brother. And the therapist is asking, are there any good memories of that you have with your brother? And you know, this boy goes into a big long monologue about how he remembers he was in the forest with his brother, and they were sitting in a tree, and an eagle landed on the tree. And it was just a really happy memory for him. So it was a very emotional scene. It was definitely hard to do, especially like three times in 1 week. but it was good. And I've never seen my audition tape. A lot of people told me that it was cool. And I really want to see it, especially after this time. I feel like I'd look so different.
Yeah, it's funny because you watch some of those early episodes too. Man, it's just like you're changing before our very eyes. Interesting scene that you mentioned that too, because if you change brother for doppelganger and bird for owl, I'm not sure if we'd if there's some some insight into that. Okay, we talk about how young you are. I mean, very young. I'm thinking about that. I'm kind of running the numbers too. You're born around what, 2000, 2001, somewhere around there?
01, yeah, February 01.
01, okay. Okay, my first Batman, Adam West, the original Batman. I don't go back to when it aired. I saw it in syndication years later. But Adam West, my first Batman. Your first Batman, I'm guessing Christian Bale, probably, right?
Yes, Christian Bale.
Okay.
I think the first Christian Bale movie came out. Was it
like 2005? Yeah, 2005. Yeah. So you're.
I obviously I've seen them all. I've seen the trilogy many times, but I don't even remember. I don't think I even saw. I think the only one I saw in theaters was the last one.
I would think, yeah.
I wasn't even old enough for the first two.
You weren't allowed in. No, yeah. You had to stay home on that one. So, okay, so all your sort of reference points for Batman are the dark, gritty Batman, the dark, violent Batman. Have you ever been able to kind of go back and check out some of the lighter stuff, like Adam West, maybe the cartoons?
Oh, absolutely.
You... Okay,
As soon as I booked Gotham, I did everything. I saw everything I could, comic books, movies. And so I've seen every incarnation of Batman that there is. But you're right. Like before that, when I was just kind of not doing research per se, it was just that dark Christian Bale version of Batman that I was familiar with.
Okay, and that kind of fits Gotham too, so that probably helps. So what kind of comic book preps did you do going into it? I know we talked about, and we'll get into this, some of the more recent ones. But did they give you anything initially to kind of look at?
No, and actually, I'm kind of regretting I didn't ask them to.
Let's get some free comic books out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I should have, because I've talked to a lot of cast members, and many of them who are characters in the comics have said that they asked DC for comics regarding their characters, and they tell me the stories about how Geoff Johns handpicked comics for them that they should read for inspiration. I'm like, I should have done that.
Yeah, you should have. Yeah, you could add some cool stuff there.
Yeah, exactly. I want Geoff Johns to handpick some comics for me, but
you probably have him on speed dial though now, right?
Yeah, we're best friends.
Yeah, you could probably get a few of them. even in the pilot, have they ever established what time period Gotham is set in? Because we see tech, but it's like maybe older tech, like maybe 80s or 90s tech.
Yeah,
kind of. The cars are a little weird sometimes.
There is no time period in Gotham. I think one of the great things about it is that Gotham is a fantastical show. It's fantasy. Gotham's not a real place, so why should it take place in real time? Is kind of the way I think about it. I know, like, it's kind of funny reading all the comic books. Whenever a comic book comes out, they always have the setting be whatever year that comic book was written, and like with technology like that, like I'm talking about Batman, and with technology in accordance to whatever that year is. But yeah, Gotham doesn't do that, because it should have a feeling of the past, because it's, you know, the present should be Batman, and obviously we're not there yet.
Yeah.
And so it should have the feeling of the past, but we're not exactly sure where in the past we are. We could be, you know, there are flip phones, but at the same time there are, you know, 60s cars, and like a lot of the architecture is from the 20s. You know, the fashion senses, a lot of the influence there comes from the 70s. So, you know, we're kind of all over the place.
It's kind of a mashup, yeah, of the history.
Done on purpose.
Yeah, no, it's a great look. There's two relationships I want to delve into: Bruce and Jim Gordon, and Bruce and Alfred. Okay, on Gotham, the relationship between Gordon and Bruce Wayne is hero-victim. So, you know, Jim Gordon, the hero, Bruce Wayne, the victim, his parents are killed. Eventually, they become crime-fighting peers. Have you had discussions with Ben McKenzie, who plays Jim Gordon? Have you had discussions with him regarding sort of that evolving relationship and how you get there, or some things you can do in conversation to get there?
Absolutely. I think... You know, one of the things about the show is that the writers are, they don't tell us a lot. They kind of, I mean, me at least, I don't exactly know what they do for other cast members, but for me, they give me a rundown of what's going on throughout the season. But I don't really know exactly like what the evolution of, say, you know, you brought up Jim Gordon. I don't really know exactly what's going to go down and what that evolution is going to look like. But you can kind of see it start happening. But yeah, I mean, I've talked to Ben about, you know, how we're going to get from exactly what you said, how we're going to get from hero and victim to crime fighting peers. And it's a tricky one with Jim Gordon, because in the comics, obviously Jim Gordon doesn't know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And so, but in the show, they're very close. And at this point, Bruce has no real secrets from Jim. I mean, I guess that there are a couple things that he hasn't told Jim, but for the most part, he's pretty open. And so I'm interested to see, and I think I know the answer, but like I said, I'm not completely sure, because until I get a script, yeah. I really don't know exactly what's happening. And so how we're going to see Bruce start to hide things from Jim, and how, because in the comics, Jim thinks that Bruce is a party boy, playboy, waste of a life. And I'm very interested to see how, cause I mean, at this point, Gordon has very high respect for Bruce, because he's seen all that he can accomplish at such a young age. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I'm dying to discover how that transforms into the relationship from the comics. And then that's the Jim Gordon Bruce Wayne relationship. But then you have the Jim Gordon Batman relationship, which also will. So honestly, the real answer is I'm just kind of speculating. But the real answer is I don't know.
I know Gotham changes things up. I'm hoping that's one of the things they change, because I Jim Gordon would figure it out. I mean, he's smart enough.
Exactly.
He'd know. So I'm hoping they kind of change that to where it's like, yeah, you're Batman. Let's go fight crime.
Right. I mean, yeah. I hope so too. But like I said, I literally have absolutely no idea what they're planning on doing. And I honestly don't even know if they know.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not, you know, one of the I think they might have some ideas for how things evolve in the future, but if it's not like an immediate storyline, I don't think they focus on things like that until it's relevant. And at this point, Bruce is still pretty young, so it's not, you know, I don't think he's planning on putting on a mask anytime soon, especially not one with ears. So, you know, I don't think it's relevant just yet. So we'll see. I mean, I've said this a million times now. I don't know. I wish I
Fair enough. Ben voiced Batman Bruce Wayne in Batman Year One. Did he give you any Bruce Wayne tips?
Did he give me any Bruce Wayne tips? You know, funny enough, I actually just found out that he voiced Batman Year One. And it's funny because Year One is one of my absolute favorite comics ever. But I just found out that he did it, like, just I think it was the end of Season 2 when I found out. So no, he didn't. but it was kind of really funny to find that out.
The other relationship I want to talk about was with Sean Pertwee, who plays Alfred. Just having an actor of his stature, with that resume right there with you, side by side, what kind of acting questions do you pepper him with? I mean, again, we talk about acting classes. That's got to be a master class right there.
Absolutely. I mean, Sean, he's one of those people that is just filled with so much light and so much, you know, good nature that it's just so much fun to be around him. And also he's such a great actor, and he's had so much experience, and he's constantly telling me stories about, like, oh, you know, David, this reminds me of when I was doing this play when I was the Romans fighting off, you know, and he talks about some war scene that he did years ago. I don't know. It's so much fun to have to exactly what you said, to act alongside somebody who has had so much experience and I can learn so much from. And, you know, especially when you're working with somebody, not just that closely and so frequently, but also when you're working with them with a relationship like Bruce Wayne, Alfred, which is such a core relationship to any of the Batman mythology. And especially to Gotham, Alfred is a key, essential part of Bruce's development. As you'll see in the future, we're shooting an episode right now where there's an amazing, amazing scene between the two of them, which I'm so excited to shoot. And it's like a huge, huge, huge step in Bruce's development onto becoming Batman. And Alfred's always right there beside him. So, I'm so thankful that I'm working with Sean, because he's such a great guy.
How does it impact your performance shooting in New York as opposed to just shooting this in Los Angeles, like so many other shows?
You mean how does it impact my, like, so not personally, but, you know, in
you're in these buildings are amazing. I mean, you can't CG. I mean, there's CG enhancements, but I mean, you look at New York, you look at the buildings, and you guys are shooting in the buildings. You're going on location. There's iconic imagery right behind you all the time. You're immersed in it. You're not on a soundstage for the most part. Just how does that sort of impact you and your performance and just being immersed in that environment?
Well, yeah, it's exactly what you said. I mean, one of the things about Gotham and New York both is that there's so many different kinds of places. Like, you could go on the Upper East Side and shoot at a beautiful brownstone, and then, you know, you have a half hour drive away and you're in upstate New York in the middle of a forest, and you can shoot a scene there, and then you go in the middle of Queens or Brooklyn, or you're in a completely different area. And so there are just so many different parts to shooting in a place like New York, where in such a small area, you have so many different kinds of places. And that's exactly what Gotham is. And that's what you need. You need to have that diversity in appearances, with the city. And, you know, Gotham is New York. Gotham was completely 100% inspired by New York. It basically isn't, I mean, Batman originally was fighting crime in New York City. you know, Gotham is New York just with a different name. And so, and to be immersed in New York culture and to know what it's like to live in a place like that, it helps immensely when you're shooting a show like Gotham.
When we spoke in Cincinnati, you'd mentioned about the inspirations you were drawing from the Court of Owls storyline in the Batman comic book. Was that the thought in season one that they might build toward that, or did that sort of develop later?
I don't know. That's a great question. One that I would actually now like to know the answer to. I first knew that Gotham was going to be taking on the Court of Owls when I read the script for season 2, episode 21, when there was a lady in an owl mask.
that was the giveaway.
Yeah, that was a giveaway. You know, it's funny. Gotham doesn't actually say the words "the Court of Owls" until the episode that's airing this Monday. And I don't feel bad spoiling that because it was in the promo.
Yeah, they did say that. Yeah, and the big owl ring and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the first time that we're actually saying the Court of Owls. But yeah, I don't know how far back the Gotham writers decided to take on the Court of Owls. But I think it's I think it's really cool because, first of all, obviously this is the first live action that the Court of Owls have been a part of. Yeah. And in order to have, you know, that be Gotham. And also there's really only one, I mean, Court of Owls is such a new villain. They were created in 2011, yeah. Right? And so it's only 2016 right now. So it's really cool to take on, to be kind of the second, like if, you know, think about it, that's really cool for me is in years down the line, say 30, 50 years down the line, if somebody is doing a Batman movie and the Court of Owls is the villain and they want to do research on the Court of Owls, they're going to be looking at the original source, which is going to be Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, and they're going to be looking at Gotham because that's kind of the second primary source my history class is coming out right now.
School's paying off.
Yeah, exactly. It's the second time that the Court of Owls has ever been in the Batman mythos, and for that to be Gotham, you know, it's really cool. And also, like when like you said, I've been going to a lot of conventions recently, and I've been seeing a lot of people wearing Court of Owls masks, and I think that's largely due to the fact that Gotham is bringing it on. And so it's really exciting. It's really exciting to be a part of that and to initiate that.
It seems there's an effort at one point to sort of get Alfred and Bruce into the cave, for lack of a better term. I know it's not the Batcave officially, but it was kind of a Batcave. Is there an element of those two working together, doing detective work some more? I mean, I know Bruce has kind of been delving into the mystery of the Waynes and kind of going back bit by bit. But it sort of seemed like there was going to be like maybe some really hardcore detective work going on between the two of them. Are we going to kind of get back to that?
It's very interesting, and I've been thinking about this a lot recently. I think Bruce is at a stage right now, at this point, I mean, you know, since the beginning of season one, since episode 4 of season one, that's when the first time he saw the files come out, and he started, like, researching stuff. I forgot what it was specifically, but that was, like, the first time you saw him, like, do any kind of detective work whatsoever. And from then up until even now, he's really only interested in doing detective work if it's concerning the death of his parents. Obviously, Batman is not just interested in his parents' murder. He's interested in saving all the people of Gotham. And in season 3, Bruce will make that transformation to go from only being concerned with his parents' murder and to being concerned with the well-being of all Gotham citizens. And the episode that I was telling you about, that we're shooting right now, we start to shoot it next week, actually. That's when he begins that transformation. And it's really exciting and it's really special the way that they do it. And so I think once Bruce fully makes that transformation and really starts to care about, and realize that there is nobody protecting, the average Joe Schmo in Gotham, and Bruce is going to take that upon himself to do so, you're really going to start to see the detective work come out then, But and it's sooner than you think. Like I know I'm talking about it like it's, you know, it's down the line. It's going to happen in a couple of seasons from now. That's not the case. I'm telling you, it'll happen in season three. It's going to happen in just a couple episodes. And it's very exciting, and it's going to be very soon.
Do you think he's going to be doing some more detective work regarding an individual that looks a lot like him? come on, we got to find out where poor Five, what his, there's got to be some more backstory to this poor guy.
That's what I'll tell you. Five is coming back very soon.
Okay.
Very, very soon. And he is not, I mean, you know this already. He got kidnapped by the Court of Owls. It's not going to be good for Bruce.
For
Bruce, yeah.
Okay.
When he comes back, it's going to be bad news, and it's going to be something that's very hard to overcome. And it'll be a major part of Bruce's storyline, what's happening with Bruce in the second part of season three. And that will help catapult him into accelerating his journey into becoming Batman.
You get to play so many other layers with Five. I mean, even just from a physical standpoint. We've seen him throw down.
Yeah.
How much training went into that? And did you get to do much of the fighting scene? Stunts? Or did you get to get in there and throw a few punches?
I'm guessing you're talking about the scene when he comes in and saves Selina.
There's a scene where he saves Selina where he just takes out a room full of bad guys. And then there's also one where he goes toe-to-toe with Alfred, which was pretty amazing. Right.
Yeah, no, both of those were pretty much me. The one where Five, it's weird because everybody, like all the fans and whenever I get interviewed, call him Five, because I guess that's what you would call him. Yeah. But in the script, it always refers to him as Bruce 2. So that's what I'm used to referring to him as, Bruce 2. But I mean, obviously Bruce 2, the words Bruce 2 are never mentioned by anybody saying anything in Gotham. So, right. It's just weird. Like when you first said Five, I was like, what's Five? And then, you know, it hit me.
I was going to say 514A, but it gets a little worse.
Oh, right. I think you did. But so that scene where you saved Selina, that was pretty much me. I love doing fight scenes like that. You know, you asked about training. I actually am doing training this year. I'm doing Krav Maga. I'm doing jiu-jitsu. I'm, you know, just learning how to escape different dangerous situations that you could be in, learning how to take somebody down, learning fighting, things like that, and also just regular, you know, weight training and building some muscle. I started that at the beginning of the season, it's something that the people in Gotham have pushed me to do, and I love it, and it's definitely paying off. And especially when, like I talked about Bruce making that transformation later in the season, it's really going to help because fight scenes are definitely going to be a huge part of what's coming, which is very, very exciting. The scene that you mentioned with Bruce, I was going to say Bruce 2 again.
Bruce 2.
With Five fighting with Alfred, that was actually, it's funny because in that scene, Five and Bruce were in it. And so whenever we do a scene like that, it's very tricky to pull off. And if you notice, Bruce like is only facing one way the whole time. He never turns around.
Yeah.
And Five is always facing the other way the whole time. He never turns around. And that's done completely on purpose. And so half of what you saw was me. And then anything that was from the back of like the shooting in the direction that Five was looking in.
Yeah.
That was not me because I was playing Bruce.
At least I didn't do the old split screen like on the Patty Duke show, though.
Oh, yeah.
I could have done the old split screen, which is really bad.
Yeah, no, there are some shots that are really cool where both of my face, like they did that a couple of times where they do a shot and they shoot me as one person and then I come back. And then they lock the camera. They leave it in that place. I go upstairs. I get my wig off or I get my wig on or whatever it was. I change my clothes. Then I come back and be the other person. And then, you know, they overlap those two takes onto each other.
Is there a particular DC Comics character you want to see on the show?
There are a couple that I would really love to see. I don't know how, like, they're like I would love to see Bane on the show, but there's a part of me that doesn't want to see Bane on the show because Bane shouldn't be in Gotham at this time.
Right.
But there's another part of me that just like wants to know what he's doing at this time. And so,
like Team Bane, like hanging out in school.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of, well, cause he's supposed to be in a prison and, you know, in some
Santa Prisca, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's he in? He's in some, he's in a South American country.
Santa Prisca, right? I think they call it.
Right. So he shouldn't be in Gotham yet. Cause he comes to Gotham as an adult.
Yeah.
As Bane. And so I don't want him. So like, I like that storyline. So, you know, like a part of me doesn't want him to come to Gotham, but you know, I don't think they're going to do a storyline like going to the prison in Santa Prisca to see what he's like as a child. So, so then like a part of me does want him to come just so he can be on the show. so I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted about that. I would love to see Harley Quinn, but again, like her origin story comes when Batman has already put Joker in Arkham. So obviously that can't happen yet.
Right. Could they do something though, like, because I know they ran into this on Smallville all the time, and I know there are legalities, and I know there's, you know, with Warner Brothers and the DC Comics characters, because you got the movies, you got everything going on. Could they do something like bring a young Clark Kent on the show, who's visiting Gotham?
I mentioned that to quite a few people. I would love for that to happen. I mean, if they play it like Batman versus, because like really we've never seen any reference in Gotham to any larger DC universe. We've only seen Batman characters, and we haven't even seen half of them of the Batman characters. And so, I would love for if they play it like the way they did in Batman vs Superman, where you know Metropolis and Gotham are twin cities. I would love, like, why can't Clark Kent just come over? Take a boat ride over for the day and just like hang out with Bruce Wayne, or you know, I was even thinking like that might be a little too much for legality stuff and like exactly what you said, like it might be a little too difficult to make that work. But like maybe what they could do is if they pan off, like they start a scene in the GCPD, they start on a newspaper that like Harvey's reading, say, and the headline is 14-year-old boy in Metropolis saves busload of kids from drowning or something like that. You know, like an Easter egg like that. And, you know, like, and they don't have to have a picture. They don't have to have anything. Like, and they don't have to write the words Clark Kent. And, but, you know, everybody would know who they're talking about. Like, that would just be awesome because it would show that Gotham is part of a large DC universe. But I don't think you'd run into too many legal issues there. But I don't know. I mean, it's obviously not my call, but I would love for them to do that.
Well, you're obviously a fan. I mean, you're watching these things, and they're DC and Warner are going a different route than Marvel. Marvel, everything's connected. It's all together. Right. DC, everything's kind of split up. Stephen Amell has gone on record as saying, you know, Grant Gustin should have been the Flash in the movie. Just as a fan, take yourself out of, you know, yourself as an actor. Just you as a fan watching this, the Ben Affleck Batman movie. Would you as a fan want to see David Mazouz in a flashback as Bruce Wayne? Or do you think the DC stuff should stay separate?
I don't know. I mean, they've already established I forget his name. He's a really nice kid. I met him at the Batman vs Superman premiere. But they already established another little boy who was playing a young Bruce Wayne in Batman vs Superman. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to be objective because again, I am playing Bruce Wayne. I don't know. I mean, I think I would love to see that. I would love to see that, but I feel like now that they already kind of established the world, the larger, you know, DC extended universe, that's probably going to continue for many, many years to come. I feel like they can't really do it now, but if you had asked me that a year ago, even before they had any of the Batman, before they had any of the DC Extended Universe movies come out, I think I would have said yes. And I still would like to see. I mean, as a fan, you kind of want to see everything connect. Like in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., when Sam Jackson came on for an episode,
yeah.
Or like one scene, it was really exciting because it connected the movies to to the show. And that's one of the really cool things about Marvel. I don't know. Again, it's hard for me to be objective, but I think that would be cool.
What does the character of Batman mean to you? I mean, 75 years plus of history. What does the character himself mean to you?
I think Batman represents something that is very important. I think Superman represents and obviously Superman came before Batman. He represents somebody who is, you know, full of light and is always on the good side, and he's, you know, the hero that everybody kind of wants to be. But Batman is the hero that everybody could be. Batman is just a man, and also Batman is dark. Batman is not perfect. Batman is not, he's not Superman. He's very, very flawed, and he's real. He's human. But at the same time, he's an extraordinary person. And so I think he sends a really, really important message to everybody, saying that, you know, this kid, he came from a really, really hard place, and he didn't only come back from it, but he used it to catapult himself to do an amazing thing. And obviously Batman is not real, but it's a symbol. He's a symbol. He's a message. And I think it's a really, really important one.
Do you ever practice saying, "I'm Batman"?
I'm Batman. All the time. Are you kidding?
That's what we want to hear. We know it's in your future. Upcoming projects. You're going to be on the big screen.
Big screen, yeah.
Incarnate. That's coming up December 2nd. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, that's a horror movie with Aaron Eckhart. Funny enough, played Two-Face.
Two-Face movies.
Of course, I shot this movie before I even heard the name Gotham. it's kind of an exorcism kind of movie, where Aaron Eckhart plays the exorcist, and my character Cameron plays the possessed child. But it's not your typical exorcist movie where a priest comes and splutters holy water on the victim and recites phrases in Latin. Instead, it's an exorcism movie that is based around science and EKGs and wires. And Aaron Eckhart goes inside the victim's mind and extracts the devil from there. And the way the demon in the movie takes control of its victims is it shows them what they want to see. And so the victim has no intention of waking up, and because it wants to stay in this fantasy.
Okay, so you're going dark, 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 dark for this film.
Yeah, and it's funny because
we thought Gotham was dark.
No, yeah, I'm possessed for the. I play a demon, basically.
My goodness! So. You're such a nice young boy.
Yeah, and it's funny because you know, Gotham. I'm playing two roles this year, And that's the first time I've like really played, you know, two separate roles. But I kind of played two roles in this movie also, because some of the movie I'm, you know, a sweet, innocent 11-year-old boy. And then the majority of the movie I'm a possessed demon. So it was so much fun. I saw the movie for the first time a couple months ago, and it's really a must. It's a must see. It's thrilling. You're on the edge of the seat. You're on the edge of your seat the entire time. It's so suspenseful. It's so exhilarating. And let's just say that the ending will want you, you will leave you wanting more.
Well, how can fans find out more about you? Social media? You're on Twitter?
Social media, Instagram. Twitter, Facebook. Check me out. I'm there. Please. And I hope to, for the fans, I hope to meet you all soon. I do a lot of these conventions, like if you've been listening to the whole interview.
Yeah, you're everywhere, man. You are everywhere.
I'm sure I'm coming to a place close to you, so check that out. Look for me in person. I'd love to meet you. And thank you so much, Joe.
Oh, no worries. And I can attest, just meeting you in person, you are a very nice young man. So, and you treat your fans quite well. So we're looking forward to seeing you at some of these personal appearances. We're looking forward to more of Gotham's mysteries being solved, and we're looking forward to your journey as Bruce Wayne becoming Batman. David, thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
know about you, but I would love to see a movie eventually featuring David as Batman. All right, hear me out. Let's say Gotham wraps. Who knows? We're in season 3 right now, so maybe, what, 7-8 seasons? If it goes, Ben Affleck finishes his trilogy. I mean, think about it. This kid will have lived inside Bruce Wayne's noggin for years. No other actor has or will be able to bring that kind of experience to the part. I'm telling you, WB folks, if you're listening, this kid knows the history of Batman. Lock him in now. I'm just saying. That might be a very different take on the Dark Knight Detective. Would be very cool. Maybe get to see a lot more of that detective stuff coming to light. Until then, we get to see the origin story played out on Fox each and every week. Gotham returns with new episodes in January. My thanks to David for his time, not only chatting with me in Cincinnati, but for joining me on the show today. That was fun. Links to his social media pages where you can learn more about the upcoming projects we talked about, those upcoming appearances, they can all be found in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. So go check it out. Guess who else I want to hear from? I want to hear from you. That's right. All of you listeners out there, get in touch with me. Tell me what you think about the show. Tell me what you think about Gotham. What do you think about that show? Give me your guest ideas. Tell me all about your favorite comic book movies and TV shows. What do you think about eventually having David as Batman? That would be very cool. Let me know. There's a few ways you can do that. You can now record a voicemail message at the website, comicbookcentral.net. Just click the Send Voicemail tab on the right-hand side of the homepage. It's right there. A few of you out there have already done that. I appreciate that. Tell me what's on your mind. Send it along. I'll play it on the show. Also, you can drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website. That is what listener Scott Doran did. Scott writes, "Hey, Joe, I have a suggestion. After hearing some podcasts, they include newscasts. Why not read some comic-related news before the interview? Just a thought." Hey, thanks so much for listening and for writing in, Scott. Yes, I do love me some comic book related news. There is no doubt about that. And fortunately, there are dozens and dozens, hundreds maybe of websites and media outlets out there who are there. Look, they're doing a bang up job of keeping us all up to speed on all those comic book related news stories. With Comic Book Central, however, I really want to offer listeners something completely different, something that really isn't out there, certainly not all under one roof or in one lair, as this case may be. I pretty much stay focused on in-depth interviews with those talented folks out there who are bringing comic books to life. The Inside the Actor's Studio of Comic Books, as some have called it. So I kind of want to stay focused on that. Plus, to be honest, I don't know where I'd find the time to do all that news gathering. Man, everything is a comic book movie or TV show these days. So there's like tons of news out there. So yeah, those sites are out there. They're doing a great job. But I'm going to stick to the interviews. So, hey, but thanks for the suggestion, Scott. Keep them coming. Send in all of your ideas. Keep listening. Much appreciated. As long as all of you folks are out there tuning into the show each and every week, I am going to keep bringing you these crazy, cool comic book themed conversations. Speaking of which, I think I might just have another one of those coming up. Yes, I do, because next week on Comic Book Central, a powerful episode as I sit down with the president and CEO of Inspired Studios. Now, you might be more familiar with one of the earlier names the company used, Power Records. That's right, the head honcho of Power Records, Donald Kaysen. He's going to be here. Man, you talk about comic books coming to life. That is exactly what Power Records book and record sets were back in the day. Comic books coming to life. I loved them. I'll bet many of you out there loved them. Donald loved them. He's going to be here to talk about Power Records next week. I hope you'll join us. Until then, man, don't stuff your face with too many Oreo cookies. Keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
So much time, almost time. And again. Good boy. One more time.
Good morning. Did you sleep well?
Yes.
Would you like to try?
I don't think that's a particularly good idea, do you, Master Bruce?
I'm not, Alfred. I think a little exercise before breakfast might be just what he needs.
Fine. I'll go easy on you. Pop these on. Put your hand in. The other one. That. Right, step up. Now, just remember, let's see what you've got. No, keep your gloves up. Protect your chin at all times, all right? Ready? Here we go. Bosh! Ready? Come on.
Sorry.
No,
sorry.
Absolutely fine. Let's see if we can do that again. Here I come. Bloody hell. Who taught you how to do that then?
No one. If they did, I don't remember.